Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning to everybody out there listening. This is 1430 ESPN. This is the Central Valley Sports Report, and I am your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports on Blackstone Avenue. In between Sierra and Herndon, you know where it is, just on the east side of Blackstone. Come on in. They got everything you need, sports-related. I do my show from the Letterman's Jacket Room off to the right-hand side, looking at jackets from Hoover and Bullard, Kerman, Central, Matilda Torres to my right, to my left, Sanger, Liberty, Madera, Clovis West, Sunnyside behind me, Clovis North, Parlier, Clovis High, anything you want high school related, they got it here. And, of course, all the wonderful equipment, more hats, actually, to my right and up a ways. They got a nice selection of high school hats as well. All right, so what happens on the Central Valley Sports Report? We recap all the great stuff that happened this last week in the Central section, in the CIF Central section. A little bit of Fresno State talk today as well. Bulldogs are playing some pretty good football today. Kickoff on the road at 5:30. So, yeah, lots of great stuff to recap. Last night we were at the Clovis and Bullard football game. Phil Benanti and I were able to broadcast that one. Clovis, this is our first time being able to watch them in person, and they were as advertised. They played a strong, strong game defensively. They were extremely impressive. They came away with a 53-0 win on homecoming. It was a running clock in the fourth quarter. They're up 39-0 at halftime. Yeah, the defense was impressive. They put tons of pressure on Bullard. Tyler Franken, the quarterback, had no time to throw. They had like a 7-8, sometimes nine guys on the line of scrimmage. Deegan Rose was, did all he had to do, threw two touchdown passes, had one rushing touchdown. Really didn't need him in the second half, didn't put up gaudy stats, but made some very impressive throws. He's got some talented skill players behind him. Maddox Merrill did a great job running the football, had two touchdowns, over 100 yards rushing, and two pick sixes on homecoming for Aiden Hernandez. That was cool to watch. So, yeah. Clovis High looked really strong. I still got him at number 4 ranked overall. But when they enter the track, it's going to be tough, man. There are some really, really good football teams in the track this season. But congrats to Clovis on that big 53-0 homecoming win that was played at Daryl LaMonica Stadium at Tim Simons Field. I want to mention this really quick before I go into who's coming on the show today. CIF High School has put together a Hall of Fame. This is the second class that's being inducted this year. All inductees are going to be honored prior to, check this out, this is awesome, the UCLA and Fresno State football game at the Rose Bowl played on Saturday, November 30th of this year. Daryl LaMonica is being inducted into the Hall of Fame. He is the only Central Section representative from this season. He's going to be inducted, I think, 30 total, including some coaches. Jared Goff is also being inducted. Jim Harbaugh. You know what he's doing with the Chargers already, and last year with Michigan. And Gaston Green, I put that as a – because that's a name from the past. Remember him? Played for UCLA, graduated in 84 from Granada High. Or Gardena High. There you go. And, yeah, it's just a great thing that CIF High School is doing. So congrats to Daryl Monica. Gone too soon, right? We wish he was still with us to be able to enjoy that moment. So I thought you guys would be interested in that. All right, so what's going on in the show today? I'm going to be breaking down the scores after I let you guys know who's coming on. I love doing that for you guys. There are a lot of really good games last night. And one of them was Central. Central Grizzlies, 5-0, a huge win against Liberty of Bakersfield, beating them 41-14 at home. We'll be talking with Kyle Biggs about that game. Right? We've been talking a lot about Clovis North and Clovis East, right? And you know, even Clovis High right now. But Central, don't forget those guys. Those guys are playing great football, very balanced team. The defense is playing on point. So looking forward to talking to Coach Biggs after the break. Around 10:35-ish, McLean coach Andrew Pancotti is coming on. They lost a tough one on Thursday. Lost to Sunnyside 13-6. Defense did a great job holding that potent Sunnyside offense. Only 13 points. It was 6-6 at halftime. He's a friend of the show. He is a great guy. He's doing fantastic things at McLean. He always gets me fired up when he comes in, and I'm ready to run through a wall for that guy. I always look forward to talking to him. He's coming on around 10:35. At the top of the hour, Phil Bonatti, who's my partner in crime at play-by-play this year. We were very impressed by Clovis High last night. We're going to be talking about that game, some of the other track teams as well. A little Fresno State talk, right? He does a great job on his show, Behind the Bench, on 1430 ESPN from 3 to 6. Sometimes a little bit shorter because the San Francisco Giants games take his spot every once in a while. We know only one more week of Major League Baseball. But Phil is coming on the show. Looking forward to talking to him. And then at the bottom of hour number two, around 11:30 or so, we got Shafter coach Gerald Perucci. His Shafter Generals defeated Edison of Fresno 50-12 last night. Yeah, you heard that right. 50-12, Edison of Fresno. Edison of Fresno, the Tigers, are now 0-5. What in the world is going on with them? Shafter, who would have thought 5-6 years ago that those teams would even play a game, let alone Shafter beat them 50-12. Coach Perucci is a great guy. If you remember, he was involved in that controversial playoff game last year against Torres that ended on an illegal play that wasn't called where the center caught a two-point conversion. So I'm going to ask him about that. We haven't talked publicly about that game. How has he framed it 10 months later? His Generals are undefeated this season. What are their playoff chances? So he's always on this season. Fireball defeated Del Oro 42-7. Frontier of Bakersfield played San Joaquin Memorial at home, came away with a 42-8 win. Hanford, I predicted they'd score in the 50s. They defeated Redwood 56-12. Hanford 5-0. Redwood falls to 0-5. And Emmanuel, how about those Eagles defeated Avenel 41-0? What that means, let me go to Max Preps here. Emmanuel's now 4-0 on the season. They have not allowed a point all season. Defeated Taft 42-0, Kern Valley 48-0, Orosi 32-0, and then Avenel 41-0. So the Eagles are rolling. Paso Robles defeated Atascadero 30-15. Sanger and Kingsburg, that game was 20-3. The Apaches were leading. Kingsburg with a couple late touchdowns, not enough. Sanger wins 20-17. Tulare Union defeated Ridgeview 43-8. Washington Union defeated Dinuba in a real tight one. Got a lot of updates about that one, 25-24. I need to mention, too, at 1 o'clock today, Clovis North is playing Los Alamitos, Veterans Memorial Stadium at 1, a battle of top 25 teams. That's going to be a great one. I'm going to keep tabs on that for sure. So the track, how did I miss the Clovis West? Clovis West fell to Turlock. There it is. Intersectional. Clovis West fell to Turlock 19-15. Oh, and Madera came back to beat Merced 48-35. There we go. Need to scroll down a little bit more. Really good game at 1 o'clock at Veterans, Clovis North, and Los Alamitos. We know Los Alamitos came a few years ago to play Buchanan. Jaden Mandel played really, really well. They fell in a tight one in that game, but this will be another really good win for the Central Section if Clovis North is able to come pull away with the victory in that one. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to be talking with Central coach Kyle Biggs up next on 1430 ESPN. All right, welcome back to Central Valley Sports Report. You're listening to 1430 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Metters. We have Central coach Kyle Biggs on the line right now. Grizzlies are now 5-0 after demolishing Liberty Bakersfield 41-14. The team is looking really strong, have a bye week before they enter track play. So, Coach Biggs, I know Saturdays are a really busy time for you. So, first of all, thanks for jumping on and talking about your team right now.
No problem, Paul.
All right, so let's talk about the week of preparation coming into the Liberty game. What were you guys preparing for? What did you guys have to execute on the field? How did the guys perform?
They did everything we asked them to do. They played hard. They played fast. They made plays. We knew they were very, very well coached, tough team. Very big, strong, physical team. So we knew we had to be technically sound, fundamentally sound with everything we tried to do. And we were able to do that, get our guys in space and let them make plays. That's really all it was just trying to get our guys in space and let them make plays.
When you're preparing for a tough game like Liberty, during the week of preparation, you and your staff, are you focusing more on like your team and what you guys have to do against them, or are you trying to more exploit the other team's weaknesses and, like you said, get your guys in space or defensively? What are you focusing more on during the week?
We're working on ourselves mainly. We're obviously preparing and scheming for what we're going to see. But we're focused on what we have to do. As long as we do what we have to do, we feel we have enough talent and effort and energy that if we just take care of what we need to take care of, we're going to be just fine.
And I saw that on some of the highlights. Defensively, it looked like you guys were flying all over the field. Just walk us through the game from opening kickoff to halftime to the end of the game.
Aiden Chavez started off, our inside linebacker. He doesn't get talked about enough. I think he's one of the best in the area. He made a huge hit on a screen that kind of just set the tone for our defense to let Liberty know, we're not messing around. We're gonna hit you in the mouth just like we know you're gonna hit us in the mouth. And it kind of set the tone. We got a three and out. Had a good drive to start the game, and then kind of sputtered once we got inside onto their territory and had the turnover on down. Defense got the ball back, and then we were able to punch it in with a long touchdown run on third and short. And that kind of got us rolling. And the defense played excellent the whole game. They got two touchdowns late. We started seven guys in and out. And as far as the defense went, I was extremely happy with how hard they played, how physical they were, and how in tune they were with each other, in the right spots, in the right calls, doing all the right things, keeping leverage, filling gaps. They did everything excellent last night. I was really proud of the way they played. And offensively, we just hit our spots and found the mismatches and found what we wanted to do, and we were able to hit on those. So when you hit your big plays, you have a good chance of winning, and we hit on our big plays last night.
I'm going to go back to your defense a bit. Do you think your defense is an underrated part of this team? Everybody loves offense. They love stats. But is your defense, for lack of a better term, a little slept on?
Oh, definitely. Teams think they can our defense, it's hard, man, when you have a good offense who scores fast. Like, it makes it very hard for a defense to have to go out there and defend a lot. So our defense, for what they have to do, I'm tremendously proud of them. The effort they put in, we have a great defensive coaching staff. Our guys are always ready to play. And, this year, I like what we're doing on defense. I just like the way we're playing. I like the way guys are flying around. Like I said, Aiden Chavez, our middle linebacker, is setting the tone out there. That kid plays sideline to sideline, and he tries to hit everything that moves.
who made that interception I saw on ABC 30? It was a tip ball, and one of your dudes made a diving catch.
Marcus Watkins, man, made a great play on a tip ball, great hand-eye coordination. Marcus has been one of our lockdown corners. He's doing a great job. And John Della, our young sophomore corner, had 105-degree temperature on Wednesday. Goes out there and gets two interceptions on Friday. So, like I said, just extremely proud of those guys and the way they played.
And your quarterback is coming along nicely. I believe he had four touchdowns, Jelani Dipple. How has his progression been from game one to last night?
Good, man. He's getting smarter, which is helping him a lot. He's being able to kind of make reads. I don't want to say making decisions before the ball snap, but kind of finding what the defense is in and kind of have an idea of where he needs to go before the ball snap, as opposed to not knowing where he was at the beginning of the year. Sometimes he would be guessing. And I had a girl, Madden. Sorry, my daughter just hit a single, so I had to cheer for her.
Softball dad, Coach Kyle Biggs. I love it. Coach, after so you've got five wins on the season, beat Justin Garza, Eastern Alaska, Turlock, Edison from Stockton, and then Liberty last night. What you know, we had a nice chat before the season. What grade would you give your team so far through those first five games overall?
Through the first five games, you know, I thought last night was our best. I missed a banner. Sorry, man. I'm doing game changer. I think I screwed up. Last night was our best game by far. I thought our kids played extremely well. You know, I give us, we haven't played our best ball yet. We still made some stupid mistakes last night. So we're in the B range. I give us the B range. I think they're still better in us. And we're hitting our stride. We're getting better each week. And, you know, we're right where we want to be right now.
Well, you mentioned that you guys are playing really good football right now. You have a bye week before you take on Clovis North in a rematch of the D1 championship game last year, a game that we're going to have on 1430 ESPN. They play Clovis East, Clovis West, Clovis on a Thursday, two Thursday games. So Clovis East is going to be Thursday, Clovis on October 25th, Thursday, and then Buchanan. Do you kind of wish on one end you're playing so well right now that you didn't have a bye week? Like, or are you looking forward to the rest? You're like, man, I wish we could get after again on Friday.
No, man, we got Clovis North. We got to get healthy. we've been banged up all year. So it's nice to have 2 weeks to kind of prepare for that juggernaut they got going on over there. Two monster running back, the big tight ends, the Sam's kid at receiver. So it'll be nice to kind of take our breath right now, happy with where we're at, catch our breath, get healthy, get a good weekend, watch a bunch of film, and you know, be prepared for the track run, man. The track's going to be, it's daunting this year. But, you know, there are three undefeated teams. You know, Clovis North is 3-1, and their only loss is to a top-five team who, you know, a lot of teams would have lost to anyway. So it's going to be a dogfight, man, each and every week.
No, it absolutely is. I can't wait for it. You and Buchanan are the only teams that I haven't seen live in person with my own eyeballs. I've got to see a couple of your practices, but really looking forward to that game in a couple of weeks. I got one more question, Coach. I know you're on dad duty right now at some softball games, but Xavier Worthy, first NFL game, those two touchdowns were electric. You and I were texting a little bit. I'm sure your phone was blowing up. What was your reaction like when you're seeing this live on national TV, this rookie for the Kansas City Chiefs doing what he did that night?
Just extremely happy for him, man. I just couldn't be happy with him. He deserves everything he gets. He works hard. Like I said, he's super fast, and he looked super fast on those two touchdowns. I'm just happy he's in the right spot, and I'm sick of pink, man. I can't say enough good things. And just excited and happy I am to watch him and Jalen also. You know, the Bears getting off to a good start. All our guys playing at the next level. It's just fun, man. I didn't get to do it, so I'm kind of living my life through them, living my dream through them, and it's fun to watch. I'm really proud of those guys.
Yeah, I'm glad you're able to enjoy those moments. You played a big part in those guys' lives. It's a lot of fun for us to watch as well. So, Coach, thanks for coming on. Always appreciate you, and have a great weekend, man. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Paul.
All right, you bet. That was Central Coach Kyle Biggs updating about his great win last night, Central Grizzlies 41-14 over the mighty Liberty Patriots from Bakersfield. All right, up next we got McLean coach Andrew Pancotti. He is live here at First String Sports. This is an interview I look forward to every year. We got him in the house here. Can't wait to talk about his Highlanders and all the great stuff that he's doing there. You're listening to 1430 ESPN.
Step inside! Walk this way! You and me, babe!
All right, welcome back. Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. Just had a nice chat with Coach Kyle Biggs. Big win last night against Liberty. They're now 5-0 on the season. Bring it on, Andrew Pancotti, head coach of McLean. Highlanders are 3-1, had a tough 13-6 loss to Sunnyside on Thursday. And like I mentioned in my opener, this is an interview that I look forward to every year. I would run through a wall for this guy, man, to my left here. So what's going on, my friend? How you doing?
Hey, Paul. Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and so life moment this last July, life-changing moment. So what happened in July?
Well, I found somebody who makes me better and allows me to coach football and put in all the time and hours, and I ended up getting married on July 13th. So
that is a big life change.
That is, because now I have a calendar that I is set and that I have to ask if I can come speak with Paul. Are we available? Because our calendar gets booked up month in advance, and we're busy people.
You are busy people. Yeah. And I see you come in. Was that your Starbucks that you – what is that?
It's black coffee with ice.
Oh, my gosh. You're going to be staying up for the next 37 hours straight drinking that.
That's it.
That's fantastic. All right. Always happy for you in that life-changing moment, and you're a better man for it, right? That's
correct.
A good way to frame it.
Absolutely.
So what did you do last night? So your game was Thursday, right? So you have Friday off, so to speak. Were you able to check out a game, or what did you end up doing last night?
Being married, you know, date night's important to us, and we don't get many of them during football season, especially this last month was very busy. So we decided to do couples golfing and dinner.
Where'd you golf at?
Belmont Country Club, yeah.
All right, so can you swing it okay?
Yeah, I mean.
To wife, or what? Are you just a hacker? You just go with your hand as hard as you can?
Well, I used to hack it pretty bad until I was like, all right, let's figure this out. And so I could swing it better now.
All right. Yeah. That's good. How about your wife?
She's great. She's
really?
Athlete. Yeah,
she's
better than me.
Really?
Right.
All right. Good to hear. So Monday is actually my 24th wedding anniversary. Crazy this coming Monday, and you are absolutely right. Like, you know, your life changes, and you you do things together, and so you got to make sure that the calendars are open. But I have a wife that has been awesome within my second career in this, right? And she knows Fridays are football games,
absolutely.
Saturday mornings are talking with great guys like you. So the marriage relationship is certainly an important thing,
and it's a give and take, right? Give and sell.
Absolutely. All right. So let's talk some football. You guys played really good football in your first three games. You defeated Avenel, Mendota, Santa Maria by scores of 40-7, 48-21, 55-0. Let's talk about those games first before the Sunnyside game, which is kind of what was working. I mean, obviously the offense and defense, you guys are playing really good football. But, well, you know, how do you summarize those three games?
Well, I think it's really starting to show, being my fourth year at McLean, the weight room. When I first got there, we would lose the point of attack in the first 2 years, and we really struggled with moving the ball and stopping. But now these kids have bought into the weight room this last 2-3 years, and their bodies are showing, and you just see the difference on the field. And I think that's why we closed the gap with Sunnyside, right? And we were able to match up. So, yeah, the first 3 games are great. We had a lot of offensive success. Defensively, we weren't doing as good as we thought we should and wanted to. So, yeah, we made some adjustments, and I thought we played great against Sunnyside.
All right, so let's go into that Sunnyside game. So a big game right off the bat to start league, right? Just kind of walk us through that game and what transpired.
So they got the ball first. We stopped them, you know, forced fumble. I think we had 2 or 3 forced fumbles. Lots of sacks. We didn't allow them to have a passing touchdown, which is huge against Sunnyside. They're usually scoring like 40 points a game, you know. And so defensively, they played amazing. My defensive staff, Coach DJ Savoy, who's my defensive coordinator, and my D-line coach, Coach Henry, and linebackers coach Demo, and DB's coach, Coach Ware, they've been with me for the last 3 years, and our defense is definitely our strength of our team, and they played great. Really good. So
you mentioned the 2 or 3 forced fumbles. You know, Sunnyside has a vaulted passing attack. How are you guys able to suppress that? You mentioned no passing touchdowns.
Yep.
How are you guys able to shut that down?
You know, we have athletes that have been training in the weight room and speed training and 7-on-7 and covering and working all of our coverages and stuff like that. We have some great athletes back there. Desiree Newhouse, 2-year starter. Demetrius Simon, 2-year starter. Jaron Scott, Juju Scott, Pitts. So many great kids back there that have bought into working together whether running man, zone, or combo. And they put a lot of time in. We went over summer. Every weekend we're at a 7-on-7 tournament.
Yeah.
And we went to the Fresno State 7-on-7 tournament and made it to the Final Four. You know, and so these kids have been working on covering, and because we know we have to do it. We got Sunnyside, obviously we played and did well, but going to the playoffs, you know, you got Shafter and Kalinga and Exeter and these teams up there, they're going to throw the ball around. So we got to be able to, you know, stop it.
So let's go back a couple years. Do you think your team would have been as prepared against Sunnyside a couple years ago, right? Would that Sunnyside game on Thursday a couple years ago be too big of a game, for lack of a better phrase to use?
Yeah, it was. It was too big of a game for us the last 16 years that McLean has played Sunnyside. But now I believe our boys believe they're on the same level as Sunnyside. So that's...
How do the kids respond after that loss? You want to see emotion. You want to see disappointment. You might even want to see a few tears, right?
Yeah.
What was their reaction, and how did you respond after the game?
Well, previously when dealing with adversity at McLean, there's a lot of selfish, you suck, it's not my fault, you know, those type of things. But this year, man, after loss, there was some emotion. It hurt. You can tell it stung. The boys believed they could win. But it wasn't a thing of like, oh, you know, your fault. It was like, hey, man, bring it in together. And the kids knew, like, look, our purpose this year is bigger than beating Sunnyside. We want to have a winning record back-to-back years. We want to win the first playoff game in 30 years. And we want to push it as far as we can to the championship. And so it was more of a, like, let's get together. Let's get back Monday, back to work.
How long – so – did you start seeing the seeds of that type of, emotion in a good way, kind of progress throughout your fourth year at McLean? Like you said, first they're like blaming each other, right? And then maybe their body language isn't so good, or maybe they're just walking off by themselves to the point. Now, when did you start really seeing the seeds of being mature?
So 2 years ago was awful. Like, we had to kick kids off the team, like, by now, right? Then this year, last year, we had like this one kid really that we had to deal with and working with. After last year, we go to Hume Lake in March, and I think that's been the best thing for us. We actually get sponsored by an anonymous sponsor. You know, somebody donates probably $10,000 to $12,000 to us.
Wow.
Every year. And we go to the sporting camp for 3 days, and that is where these kids come together as a team, as a family, and they like brothers. And you know, you spend 3 days at this great camp, and at that camp this year, you can really see it. Like, hey, we are together. We are a team. It's not a bunch of individuals or cliques. And so that since Hume Lake, this off season, anytime adversity would hit, instead of us flipping on each other, it would be like, let's learn from our mistake, play the next play.
That's awesome. Has there been like a specific story that you can share about a kid, and maybe academically he was struggling, and how through football, you know, he got his grades up, and maybe a kid that's never been, his family, has never sent anybody to college, a kid's going to college. You have like a really neat success story.
I got a lot of kids that, potentially they're going to be the first one to go to college, right, which is awesome. And I tell them all the time, like, you can be the guy, the first person to go to the college, like, you can do that, you know, and start that trend for your family, that going to college or, you know, trade school, whatever it may be, to get educated is humongous. But we have a lot of success stories with kids that come in and they really don't have an identity. They don't really have like a group, and they get part of the football team, right? And grades get right, behavior changes. I think a lot of teenagers, your freshman and sophomore year, these kids are always kind of wonky, right? And it's really cool to see by like their sophomore year or sophomore, so they start to become young men, they're more mature, and you can trust them a lot more going into the junior and senior year. So that's always kind of been my thing with coaching, is I just want to maximize each individual kid's potential, right? Because everyone's different. Everybody is different. I got a kid that's a 3.8. You know, and all the way down to a you know, point A, but how can I make these kids both the best possible? And that's always my goal, you know, to maximize their potentials.
And it's absolutely working. You're doing great things at McLean High School. Talking with Andrew Pancotti, the head football coach. You had a pretty special moment that you shared with me, and I hope you hope you're able to share this. So you had somebody on the sidelines for the game against Sunnyside. So who was there, and what did that mean to you guys? What did he? How did he encourage you guys?
Yeah, I got a text from the Fresno State recruiting coordinator, Al Jay. He said, "Hey, Skipper's going to come. Coach Skipper's going to come to your football game on Thursday night, you know," and he asked me some details. Like, okay, cool. And so my admin was able to help him, get him a parking spot and get him in a sideline pass and so on. And he came up to me during our pregame and hey, coach, what's up? And he's like, hey, you remember me? It's like, how can I forget you, dude? Like,
do you remember him?
Yeah, he's like, do you remember? I was like, yeah, dude, because he recruited me, you know, back in 06, Skipper, Tim Simons, Baxter, you know, Pat Hill, back in the day, you know, I've had many conversations with those guys. I was like, coach, of course I remember you. And so he's like, oh, yeah, okay. And so he was super cool, man. He was talking to the guys, you know, just hanging out. And stayed the whole game and on the sideline and sent me a nice text after the game, which was super nice, man. And so I'm a big Bulldog fan, and I'm definitely a big fan of Coach Skipper, and I hope, you know, he keeps doing what he's doing and stays there, because that was huge.
No, that is huge. And, yeah, right, for him to come up and approach you and not be, you know, arrogant, mm-hmm. or, you know, I mean, that's just, I think that speaks a lot about him as a coach, what he's bringing to the Bulldogs, and, you know, speaks a lot for, you know, what they're doing in the Valley and making a presence known. Were your kids a little nervous? Did they know who it was?
Or I got the text in the morning, and I was like, oh, hey, Coach Skipper from Fresno State's coming. They're like, wow, go, wow. Like, we got to go crazy. You know, we got to show out, you know, all these things. So they were super excited that D1 college coach, especially our, you know, come to our sideline and kind of just hang out with us. You know, that's what it felt like. Like, he was just like, hey, I'm here to support you guys, man. And I just want to see you guys have success. And that was super cool.
That is cool. That is awesome. I love that story. And they're playing tonight. And sure, we'll be watching. You'll be watching the game
Absolutely.
At 5:30. Be watching, yes. and rooting on the Bulldogs. You've told this story on air, but I love it every time you tell it. When you first got the gig at McLean and you called that coaches meeting or the players meeting, right, meeting these guys for the first time, and just you're looking around and you're like, when's everybody else going to come, right? Just kind of go over that story, because it was 4 years ago, and then you guys are on the cusp of a really good season 4 years later. So just kind of remind people about that story.
Yeah, I just think that when I first got there, I thought it would be a little bit different. The kids, you know, it was post-COVID, one. Two, the kids were just not there. They just weren't there. They were different schools.
Mentally or physically, right?
Physically, they're not there. I'm like, how am I going to build a team or an offense? I got like 20 kids in front of me, you know. And one of the things that they started coming in later, right, because it wasn't a coach there. They had an intern coach. It wasn't nobody, you know, doing off-season workouts. There was nobody doing the 7-on-7s. No one doing all that stuff. And so it took a while to get everybody back. Hey, let's go practice at this time. Show up, you know, and coordinate and communicate with that. But we ended up going 5-5 our first year, so we figured it out. But yeah, it's come a long way.
It's come a long way, absolutely. So when do you coach, when do you know the difference between really getting on a player, right, and then maybe like just coming alongside him, right? The difference between that. How have you been able to figure that out?
Well, one of the things I've learned, especially at McLean, is that a lot of our boys don't respond well to yelling and getting on them, or, you know, cracking the whip, right? In leadership, I really feel like there's three ways of leading, right? You have fear, which is like, if you don't do this, I'm going to make you do down-ups. I'm going to make you run, right? Those type of things. If you do this, I'm going to reward you, right? That's complete opposites. The biggest thing I think I try to teach is the purpose. Why are we doing what we're doing? Why is it important to show up to practice prepared, ready to go, mentally and physically? What's your tennis shoes? What's your cleats? Right, and all the everything you need. Why is it important to be a good teammate? You know, why is it important to be coachable, have good body language? Right, and trying to explain the purpose so they understand the purpose. So then I don't have to come in and crack the whip because they know why we show up is because we want to be better, right? We want to make ourselves better, which makes the team better, which makes the school better.
Where did that philosophy come from?
So I read a book, Lead for God's Sake, back in Wisconsin. I was in Wisconsin 4 years being a coach in strength conditioning. It was very impactful. And so once I read it and I kind of just kept molding it to my own thing, I've always heard of like demand and reward. That's kind of the reward side. You know, I know there's old school coaches that crack that whip, dude.
You don't get water all during practice, right?
It's like it's fear, right? Yeah. It's like total like fear, like you don't mess up because Randy Blankenship is going to get in, you know. And so, and I just read it. And I was like, man, I like this. And just really always trying to explain the purpose of what we're doing and why it's important. And if you have questions, talk to me. Like, what you know, do you have an opinion on this? Let's talk about it. So
you mentioned you're coached in a different state for 4 years. So what was your? Let's go back a little bit. Let's talk about your Clovis East days. I always like to bring that stuff up. So what years were you at Clovis East, and you know how good were your teams, and you know, and those Valley Championships? What stands out to you?
Well, I was there 03 to 06. Okay. My sophomore year, I was starting safety. We went down to Long Beach Poly. We beat Long Beach Poly the first time, I think, since 1987 or something in their stadium. And so that was a huge game for us in the program, obviously. Then we lost to Clovis West during the league play, so we weren't the league champions. But we ended up playing Clovis West in the D1 championship and beat them. And so I was sophomore, free safety. We were section champions. And then we played Long Beach Poly again in 04. They beat us in double overtime here. That's when they had DeSean Jackson. And that boy was quick, man. I will never forget how fast he was.
But so you're playing. I want to go back to that. So you're playing safety?
Safety, yep.
And DeSean, you got to know where that dude. You remember what number
one,
it was?
Number one.
Number one, yeah. Right? You wore that number throughout his career. Like, you just got to account for that dude?
Yeah. And then they would just throw little slip screens to him, and he would just boom, 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 gone. Like, quick. You and I kind of, they had like six or seven dudes that fast on that team. It was insane.
Did you hit them?
Yes, we hit them.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
And so, yeah, we went to double overtime, ended up losing it at home. But then my senior year, we flew to Texas. We played Midland Lee, and we won that game in double overtime. So Tim Murphy, Ryan Reynolds, you know, Mike Menzies, man, Greg Connor, they had some great teachers. Great coaches, still mentors to me today, led by Jeff, even the principal. And that's how I ended up going to Wisconsin, because Jeff ended up calling me and offering me the job. He was over there. So
the toughness that your teams had, like, what were practices like during those days? Were they just as hard as the games? Are hitting just as hard?
Well, we, you know, it's weird. We never, like, threw the ball, right? So
yeah.
We didn't have, like, 7-on-7 periods and, you know, 1-on-1s or, you know, Scally matching up, you know, coverages. So we would always just do double tight, you know, the wing, ground and pound, blocking, you know, those type of things. It was 2-3 hours of practice, you know, in the morning, weight room. Back in that day, that zero period started at 6:30 a.m.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so we had to be there at 6:15 a.m., ready to go, and then you – all the way till, you know, 7 that night.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. But it was worth it.
Yes, absolutely.
It was worth it, man. Were there so 2-3 hour practices hitting each other all the time? Were there times where you're like, dude, I don't like football right now. I don't like my teammates, right? But we're trying to make each other better. Are there some of those types of moments?
There's always fatigue that sets in throughout a season, especially when you start pushing 13, 14 weeks, you know. And then over the summer, we were hitting – over the summer back then, right? Fresno State camp, 3-4 days, Clovis East contract
camp. You guys are hitting with pads, right?
Yeah, full pads. We got our pads on June 5th, you know.
Wow.
That was a long season. But
I want to ask you, Coach, we got about 3 more minutes right now. Just, the state of high school football. You've been around the game a long time. You just mentioned your great days playing at Clovis East. Transfers and just the different things that are going on. What's your opinion on where high school football is right now?
It's getting wild, you know. You never know when a kid's going to transfer in, transfer out. And it's just their opinion. They think the grass is greener on the other side, you know. I had a kid, eighth grader, transferred to Memorial. You know, he thought it would be better over there. Didn't work out. He transferred back last week, you know. And so now these kids, they can come and go as they please. And so I think that it's good that a kid kind of gets the freedom to choose where he wants to go, because it's not fair to kids. If I'm at a high school that there's I'm on my fourth head football coach, right, in 4 years or three, that's not fair to them. They want to be a part of a program of consistency, being coached well in a good school and so on. But, you know, you can't transfer because athletically motivated, right? So then they have to find other ways, and all these kids are doing it. Find an address, do the paperwork, make it look legit, and then they move, you know. It could suck for some schools, but it could be great for other schools, you know.
Yeah, it's certainly a tricky subject, and right, you just would hear back in the days about how SoCal is, right?
Yeah.
The backup quarterback is now the starting quarterback at this school, and because that kid lost his job, he's going to another school. So you hear about those stories, and it's creeping in slightly with a little bit more with the Central section. So, yeah, I think we've lost some identity in some ways, right? You know, you playing at Clovis East, those are the dudes that you rode with, right? Right.
Elementary.
Right and die, right? Yep. Elementary school.
Elementary, junior high, Clovis. We never had a kid transfer in, never had a kid transfer out.
Well, those are the guys you played with. All right. So next week on the 27th, you guys are going to be playing Fresno High. Did we announce it? I think we're good to go, right? We announced it last night. So Phil Bonatti and I, who's coming on next, we're going to be broadcasting your game on 1430 ESPN. So we're excited about that.
Nice. That's cool, man.
We're excited about that. I mean, it's not as cool as, like, Tim Skipper coming on the sidelines, right, and approaching you guys. But I think it's really, really cool. All right, so you guys got Fresno High, and you got Torres, Roosevelt, Sanger West, Madera South, and then you end the season with Hoover. We got another minute here, Coach. What's the ceiling for this year's group of kids, right? Is it, like, we want to make a deep run in the Valley Championship and call yourself Valley Champions? What's the ceiling with this group?
Yeah, that's definitely the ceiling. We talked about that on Thursday night. Look, we're trying to push this thing 14 weeks, right? Get to the state champ 15 weeks. And so we got to finish, 8-2, 9-1. That, you know, hopefully that's the goal, to get through the remainder of the season. And then win the first playoff game. And there hasn't been a playoff game won in 30 years, man.
Wow.
We were close last year, but we didn't finish. And so we want to do it this year. And then win the first one, win the second one, win the third one, and then, the championship game is going to be tough.
Let's make some history.
That's right.
Let's make some history.
I love it.
All right. Love you when you come on the show. Coach Pancotti, always a big treat for me. So thanks for coming in, and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you, Paul. I really appreciate everything you do.
All right. Well, coming up next, we're going to be talking with Phil Bonatti about that Clovis game last night we were able to broadcast, and much, much more on 1430 ESPN.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Hour number two of the Central Valley Sports Report. You're listening to 1430 ESPN live here at First String Sports on Blackstone Avenue in between Herndon and Sierra. Off to the right-hand side, Letterman's Jacket Room. That's where I do my show. Love it. Love everything I talk about on the show. Andrew Pancotti does a fantastic job. Just talked with him from McLean Highlanders. And I'm being honest. This guy, what he has done in the last 4 years at McLean is unbelievable. They should do one of those ESPN 30 for 30s. On the program. He kind of downplayed it a bit, but because he's told me the story a few times when he went to the first players meeting at McLean, there were like, I think he said 20, and he's like, okay, this is the varsity 20. He's like, no, this is everybody. This is JV and varsity. So what he's done to get to the point where they are, battled a really good Sunnyside team on Thursday. They got aspirations to win a Central Section championship, right? Probably going to be placed in D4. They got themselves a really good shot. I forgot something in my opener. I was so excited to talk to you guys about sports and read some scores that we got our Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating weather report I forgot to give right now. It is 80 degrees, high of 92, And then, unfortunately, it's going to stay in the 90s for about a week and a half. On Tuesday, it's supposed to hit 100. Actually, Swarna said 102. So it went down a couple degrees to 100 degrees. Hopefully, that is the last and final hot streak we're going to have before we hit that wonderful fall weather and hit October. And it's going to feel really like football season when that weather hits. All right, we got Phil Bonatti here live at First String Sports. He's been my partner in crime, does a fantastic job doing play-by-play behind the bench. I listen to his show every time driving home from week on that wonderful freeway 99 and 41. I'm stuck in traffic. I get bonus time, Phil, when I get stuck in traffic. So that's the way I got to look at it sometimes. Oh, stuck in traffic, but I get to keep listening to Phil. So, Phil, we were able to broadcast Clovis's 53-0 win over Buller last night on their homecoming. Cougars are now 5-0. Just first time seeing Clovis. What were your overall thoughts about that game?
You know, I think a lot was made about the offensive firepower from what we what was advertised with the Clovis Cougars, from my opinion, and that was exciting to watch and what they were able to operate in. But I think the underrated part was the way their defense really dominated the game. I think the defense is an X factor for this Clovis Cougar team that I don't think a lot of people – I don't know if I hear enough about this Clovis defense and what they were able to do. How about two pick sixes from Aiden Hernandez? And we, by the way, I want to say we forgot to name
let's do it now,
our
then.
Star of the game last night. We were so wrapped up in what was going on there. And so officially, the Central Valley Sports star of the game about, what, 12 hours later? Aiden Hernandez, I think that was the – obvious choice last night with the two pick sixes, including the one right before the half that really put the game away. It was like 39-0 at the half.
I made it
at that
39.
Point,
but yeah, I agree. He's our player of the game. There you go.
Yeah, there we go.
Made
officially.
It official.
There we go. So, but like I said, that defense, how aggressive they were in the pass rush. And I think that was the way they played their opponent. They knew that they – six guys on the line, seven guys up on the line, and they just go after it. They're going to get home at the quarterback. And Tyler Franklin was frustrated all game with how things went. And the timing was just off on Bullard, and that was enough for them to put up a zero on the scoreboard.
I think, you know, I texted Coach Wilkins after the game, and he said, yeah, we played a really good football game. And then he went right into the track is going to be a gauntlet, right? And we all know that. We'll get into that in just a second. But I thought, Phil, that Clovis, the game plan was executed about as perfectly as I've seen in a long time, just defensively. Offensively, I don't think they punted all game.
I think they had one punt. They had a couple punts at the end, but, of course, okay. That was kind of when they were putting the foot off the gas a little bit.
I know the coaching staff at Clovis. I'm sure they went all week game planning for that, putting 6-7. I think we sometimes saw eight guys on the line of scrimmage. And you're right, defensively, they just smothered Buller. There's no other way to frame that.
Yeah, it was a great game plan going in, and those guys really kind of just attacked. And even when Bullard could throw downfield a little bit, it was really mostly helped moving the ball on penalties. And I would say if that's one thing, and I mentioned this last night in the broadcast, if that's one thing Clovis would look to improve on is the penalty department. A lot of flags last night, you know, give or take, I think a few of them could have been held in the pocket last night of the refs. But to be fair, some were legitimate penalties, and if Clovis is going to have those penalties in those games, if you go into a track game like that with some other teams, that you know, that's something you want to clean up if you're Clovis High.
But. Absolutely. Okay, so your first look at Deegan Rose. We saw him warm up and just lofting 45 yard bombs just effortlessly.
Yeah.
Thoughts on him?
You know, just it's the poise, it's the calmness. He has quiet feet in the pocket, which is like the most you can ask for from a quarterback. Sometimes in high school, you see guys dancing around frantically, automatically rolling, seeing where they're going. Deegan just sits there, stands as tall as you can in the pocket, and just delivers a strike down the field sometimes. And he takes what's given to him. There are a few passes where he could have tried to throw for a deep ball, and we know what some teams like to do with the deep ball, but then he takes what's in front of him and throws a drag route to his tight end and goes 20 yards on a catch and run. Easy money there. His decision-making to me was as good as I've seen, at least in the high school level, and also the poise to me, the calmness. So you just don't feel a frantic energy when he's in the pocket.
That's a great way to frame it, and, you know, it's been well documented. He started as a freshman, and the first game was against Long Beach Poly, and right? To see his progression from that to the calmness, to the leadership ability that he has now. It's been impressive. And a couple of those throws, man, I think it was that second one to number seven that was, it was put in a perfect spot.
Yes.
You're like, yep, that's a D1 throw.
That was that was in the first quarter, I want to say. Yeah, it was,
the 31-yarder.
Yeah, to DeJour Malone, yep. Right, who made the catch. And he Malone and him were on the same page on that play, too. You knew exactly where that ball was going at that certain time. As perfectly as you could place a ball, he could have ran up there and put it in his arms, and it would have been the same result. But I do want to give a shout-out. Maddox Merrill had a really good game last night, too. And I thought that's why Clovis was so effective in the pass game, too, because Merrill's ability to really bounce out to each side of the line, and his ability to hit those holes. That Clovis line is doing work too, and I just want to give a shout out the run game, setting up the pass game. We saw it last week with Clovis East and how they were able to just really thrive on offense against Grant. That's the key in high school, right? The run game sets up the pass game, and if you have a running back like Maddox Merrill, right, from last night, and do what he does, it makes the job so much easier for Deacon Rose.
And we saw that. A couple running plays to start the game. I think there was actually just a quick screen pass, one of the first plays, and then they got the ability to establish the running game and then just go for the explosive play, and that's what Coach Wilkins wanted. It was one of his pregame things. I don't think he got the five I don't know. Can we count those interception returns as explosive plays?
As explosive as it gets, especially.
Those are planned, but it worked out.
I will say, on our broadcast, we've had some very strange end-of-half situations over the last 5 weeks, to say the least. You feel like the half is ending in some form or fashion, and suddenly some big play. We had it last week, Clovis East on the kick return. We know exactly what happened on Clovis West week one, the 14 points in 14 seconds or something like that. The pick six last night, Aiden Hernandez.
You're right.
Second of the half.
Second of that. What are we going to say? Three out of our five games that we've broadcasted, there's been explosive plays before the half.
I think maybe in the Clovis East Sanger game, we had the 104-yard pick six that was right, like near the end of the second quarter too, from O'Shea Webb. So
that's right.
a lot going on in these games, especially in the 2-minute situation before the half. I feel like that's such a critical point of high school football in the game, if you think about it, and that's really where momentum swings, because you could take chances and you could get burned, and we saw Buller get burned last night trying to go for it and at least try to run a hurry up, but Clovis, able to strike.
Well, it was 25-0, right? Then Clovis scored a touchdown, kicked off with about 40 seconds left.
40 seconds to go, yeah.
Yeah, and Bullard tried a running play. It didn't work. And then it was a disaster for the Knights, throwing that second pick six on an ill-advised throw. Okay, so, Phil, so now we've seen Clovis. We've broadcasted two Clovis East games, Clovis North to start off the year, Clovis West to start off the year, and then Clovis North. We haven't broadcasted Central. That's going to happen or Buchanan yet. Let's start with Clovis East. What do you like from them? We talk about them a lot on air, but what do you like about them?
I just think that's the complete package, right? That's exactly kind of what you want if you're looking to build an ideal Central Section team when it comes to being able to air the ball out, set up the run game as far as that's concerned, and the run game setting up the pass game, being complimentary on that offensive side. Ty Miller knows exactly where he needs to go with the football. He rarely makes mistakes. I don't think he's turned the ball over at least once in the two games we've called, so he's been perfect with the football. At least from what I've seen, Lindsey Graves, he's got speed. He's got that track speed going on, not just the track of the league, but literally the track and field side of things. He's a sprinter out there. We talked to him as a student athlete of the week this past week. The defense, has some room to grow, and I think that's exciting. But to be fair, that defense got tired because that offense just goes quick. It just goes so quick. And so sometimes that defense is out there for a little bit. I know they were a little banged up in the last game, we said. But also, they're the best special teams team that we've seen so far with their unit as well. And Pat Hill's been a big complimentary about it. And I think people don't realize that if you're coached up on that side of the phase of the game, you have such a bigger advantage over any other team. And Clovis East, with the way they attack on the kickoff and the way they return and the way they strategize on where to kick as far as that's concerned, it's elite stuff from Clovis East. And if you have an advantage there, there are so many more opportunities Clovis East can burn you.
Oh, they know what they're doing on special teams, and that's almost been a lost art in high school football. And how many times, Phil, have we seen in, you know, at any level, the pro level, the college level, or the high school level, those little plays can determine a championship, right? Mm-hmm. A championship or losing a big game.
Absolutely. And so Clovis East, if they can just keep it rolling, what will this team translate to in the when the track play gets going, when they face off against these opponents that where are we up on the record now on the track? I know it's 20, three losses.
25-3 with Clovis North playing Los Alamitos.
That's
today,
the day, right? Yeah. That's today at one. So yeah. We'll pending maybe a 26-3 at this point. Who knows if Clovis North can pull it off. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. Now you're kind of dreaming of the matchups of what maybe this Clovis defense could do against a Clovis East offense. I think that's a very intriguing thought to at least allow yourself to think about what this Clovis North defense will have, or what the Clovis North run game will have against this Clovis East defense, and what they could face. That might be the toughest run game they face all year.
Oh, it's gonna be amazing. I want to talk about that in just a second. All right, so Clovis North. It's been a while since we've seen them. They got that big one that I just mentioned. So went against San Joaquin Memorial, went against Redwood, lost to Jay Sarah, went against CVC. Kind of an interesting schedule, right? You got some really good teams, and then you got some teams that have very good records, and then today's game. What do you like about Clovis North, and then following them a little bit through?
I think North is kind of like I said it maybe from week one, week two. They're just they don't blow you away with the games they play as far as how they do, but they're kind of the what do you call it, the boa constrictor or the anaconda football team. I always kind of equate the Patriots, the Tom Brady kind of Patriots of these teams, where it you could feel close for a while. It's 14-0. You feel like you're right in that ball game, but they continue to squeeze the life out of it and just continue to really frustrate you, especially on that defensive side of the ball. I don't know how many points they've really given up in the last few, but at least aside from the Jay Sarah game, it's been lights out on the defensive side, and I think that's Clovis North's hallmark right now. Of course, McKay Madsen had what an incredible game, I think, last week against CVC. We'll see what he does.
Over 200
today.
Yards,
over 200 yards, four touchdowns, something like that. He's the real deal when it comes to being a weapon. The Sinfell kid as well, just another dynamic option for them on the offensive side. What I do wonder though is just there seems to be not as a consistent production as you want on that offense. Sometimes they get into ruts, and that's my only critique of that. We saw in the Redwood, I think it was only like a 14-0 ball game at the half, and you feel like, I know Redwood's pretty decent, I know they're kind of rebuilding, and I know their 0-5 record is not indicative of what they are.
They have one of the toughest schedules of anybody in the Central Section.
Exactly.
Redwood,
So it's not like but to be fair, if you're going to be Clovis North and you're going to be that team that's going to be running the track and doing what they're doing like the last year they've done, you would like to see them maybe be a little more consistent on the offensive side, and that's my one critique of Clovis North.
All right, very fair. Okay, so we're going to move on to some Fresno State stuff. However, look at this schedule. I'm just going to go – let's just talk about Clovis North's schedule. So they open with Central, rematch of D1 Central Section Championship last year. Then they play Clovis, then Buchanan, then Clovis West, and then Clovis North finishes with Clovis East on November 1st. Like, can I predict the team's going to go 5-0 or even 4-1? I don't know. I can't predict that. It's crazy, right?
I think if I had to go matchup, I'm very, very curious to see what North does against Clovis. I think that game is the most interesting to me of all the games. Everyone's looking at East versus North, but to me, I think Clovis Cougars and the what they showed last night to me, they have a formula that could potentially frustrate Clovis North. I know Clovis North is very very dynamic in what they can do, but to me, Clovis with the way they played defense last night, and I know it was just it was Bullard and Bullard's, they're going through some things as well, but to me, I think that's the most interesting game on North's schedule that I want to see.
And that's going to be October 11th at Veterans Memorial Stadium. And then there's those Thursday games. And we're looking at my spreadsheet here, color-coded spreadsheet.
Yes,
isn't
lovely.
A thing of beauty. I refer to this thing about 17 times a day. Those Thursday games that Central has to play. So Clovis East on October 11th. Actually, it'll be October 10th. And that game is going to be at La Monica, and then another Thursday game, Central and Clovis. So how about this? Central's two Thursday games are going to be against East and against Clovis, both at La Monica.
Short week, so it's interesting. I don't really know exactly the high school schedule for practices. I assume they all return Monday. Is that what they do? So yep. Those quick turnarounds and what you want to install as far as that's concerned. When it comes to Thursday games and how quick that turnaround is, usually it's talent that wins out in those games sometimes more than what the game plan could be.
And these guys are well aware of each other's strengths and weaknesses, so we can't wait for the football season, not only in the track, but all over the CMAC, NYL, all the leagues that we love to talk about. Can't wait for see how all this pans out. All right, some Fresno State thoughts headed to this game against New Mexico. What do you hope to see in this one?
I like the idea that we come off of a loss to this team from a year ago with a lot of some familiar faces that we have in Fresno State. So to me, this is not a game that they're overlooking. I think there's a lot of anger around last year's result with the 25-17 loss at Bulldog Stadium. Maybe I would consider that the most frustrating loss of last year's team from all collectively with the fans, with the players, with the coaches. Pat McCann even talked about it. He says he took it personally with how terrible they played in that one, and he's still working through that. And I think a lot of guys are ready to kind of prove themselves against this team. There's a lot. I know we have UNLV around the corner, but this is such a perfect opponent to have before it, because you have to bust that loss from a year ago. And to be fair, there is a little worry with what this New Mexico team could do on offense. This quarterback can run. Skipper talked about it. Never been sacked this year so far.
Wow.
And I know this defensive line creates a lot of pressure, but I'd like to see them finish a little bit more at the quarterback and see if they can get some sacks completed on that play. To be fair, they forced some turnovers on New Mexico State from that pressure, so at least we got that. But contain, being sound, tackle, that's going to be real key in this New Mexico game, because this quarterback's pretty dynamic with what they can do.
Talking with Phil Bonatti about Fresno State and New Mexico. Okay, so looking at the game prep here, 13.5 point spread. For those that are into it, the over-under is at 59.5. New Mexico's 0-3 on the season. What one specific aspect? You mentioned a couple, but like running game, like what would you like to really see explode in this one?
I think we saw a little bit with that running game has kind of woken up with what Malik Sherrod was able to do against New Mexico State. I think New Mexico has an issue with maybe completing four quarters of play on defensive side. If you looked at the drive charts, I pointed this out, I looked at the drive charts of Fresno State scoring drives last week. Not a single drive went longer than 3.5 minutes. On game time. So I don't think Fresno's at all concerned about eating clock or getting things, controlling the game in that sense, time of possession side of things. I think they're just concerned about scoring, go, go, go. And I worry maybe if that game plan could present an opportunity for our defense to be on the field a little bit longer than we should. But I would like to see – I think the run game for sure I want to see improvements on, but let's be fair, Fresno State is looking to air it out. I'm sure we're going to see another potential deep touchdown. I know Mac Delanis, the joke is he's going to do it on his third play tonight, but we'll see. I think Mikey's been a little bit better over the last game or two. No turnovers. It was the first game with no turnovers on offense, so I think a lot of people are relieved about that, but if they want to build off that too. I think there's – there's a lot of opportunity to really showcase that this team can air it out. And I'm saying this after beating 48-0 to New Mexico State, but it really was kind of an offensive opportunity that I think they continued to try to build on.
So Mikey Keene's numbers through the season, through the first three games, 271 passing yards, 62.4% completion rate, which is pretty normal for him. That's a pretty good one. And then 5-4 touchdown interception ratio. Well, so we got to take care of that.
Well, I will say, and I think he could have opportunities to add more, but I think Fresno's really found something with Josh Wood being the backup quarterback in the red zone. I think he's 3-for-3
different
on carrying in the red zone and right into the end zone for a touchdown. So they're able to find the finishing touches there. I know Mikey probably wants to finish the drives that he starts, but I think he'll take touchdowns as well. So I think those numbers are a little deceiving, because I do believe our offense could convert in that red zone opportunity. But Josh Woods is such a weapon there.
He's a big boy. He's a load, huh?
Yeah.
He's a big boy. All right, so New Mexico tonight, then at new UNLV, and then the bye week, and then Washington State.
How about that Washington State San Jose
about
State
that.
Last night?
I got home, got some Del Taco on the way home. I got home around 11 o'clock, was eating, and then I checked my phone. I'm like, this game is still going on?
Crazy
what
game.
What the
heck? Washington State down 2 touchdowns. They were down 38-24 in the fourth quarter. Suddenly they start turning over San Jose State, and they go and get 14 on the board. And then they score another touchdown, and they're up 6. The extra point is missed. And, you know, college extra points, it's right there. It's a little chip shot. He misses it. So they're up, I think, 43-30, I'm trying to remember. It's like 38-37, so they miss the extra point. They're down 1. Suddenly they turn it over again. Washington State scores. San Jose State ties it because they missed the two-point conversions, 43-43 or 46-43 or something like that after a field goal. Then they kick a 52-yard field goal if the kicker just missed the extra point to set it to overtime. Then they both teams throw interception in overtime number 1, which I was losing my mind that Washington – I could go on and on, and Washington State able to pull it off after San Jose State couldn't get the two-point conversion after the touchdown. But an unbelievable double overtime game last night. Two teams that have direct influence on what Fresno State will look like at the end of the year. That's our two next home teams.
They are.
Next
they
opponents.
Are.
So.
And the rare double bye week in this for Fresno State this year as well. So a couple byes in there. But, yeah, it's college football.
Yeah. Right?
And, you know, they say college football after dark. When the moon is full and the moon is high, right? Wacky and wild things happen. All right, a couple more things here with Phil Bonatti. So Fresno State. What's your prediction
for today's game?
For today's game.
For today's game, it'll be a little frustratingly close, as it always does sometimes. But last two games, Fresno State has had the lead for, I would say, about 98% of the games. 98% of time of the game, they really jump out ahead. I think that continues to be the key. I think Fresno continues to score above 40. I like a 41-22 victory at New Mexico. I think New Mexico's got some weapons. They've played a really tough schedule, too, if you're looking at it. They had Arizona, who was ranked. They've had Auburn, who's, not ranked, but SEC. It's tough to go down there and win a ball game. My Cal Bears did that, though, a couple weeks ago. But I think Fresno has the firepower to do so. I just think New Mexico just doesn't have four quarters in them. They'll keep it close for a bit, but Fresno will pull away.
All right, good stuff. All right, so what other – you mentioned Cal. The Cal resurgence. Is there a couple other games that you're looking for today? I'm looking at Tennessee, Oklahoma, 4:30.
Michigan, USC. It's going to be a massive one, especially if you want our schedule to be a little stronger. I think if you want to see Fresno State be in a bigger conversation nationwide as far as being the top Group of Five team that potentially could win a conference title, you want Michigan to beat USC today. That's an absolute win you would like to have on that schedule, so Michigan looks a little bit better on the resume. So if you're looking at a Fresno State perspective, Michigan is a massive game for us. They can take down the Trojans. Of course, I love this dynamic of Cal taking on 0-3 Florida State today. It's absolutely bonkers to me that this is the first ACC game they're going to be playing this in this new era.
Okay, so that's bizarre world, first of all, right?
Could Florida ACC. State, after going undefeated last year, get to 0-4? And Cal go to 4-0. Crazy stuff.
Am I a bad person for kind of liking that? And here's my reasoning, right? All right, they didn't get in. They didn't get in the playoffs last year. They cry and cry more, right? So whatever. All right, they didn't get in. But what do they do in the bowl game? What they do against Georgia
just
and Kendall
absolutely
Milton?
Absolutely boat raced.
They got boat raced because their dudes quit on the team.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, what's that a reflection of?
Mm-hmm.
To me, that was a reflection of the program and the coaches, right? You're complaining about it, so kids are opting out.
Yeah.
And the team that they threw out there against Georgia was like the JV team,
mm-hmm.
right? A bunch of walk-ons and water boys and equipment managers, it felt like, right?
Yeah.
Georgia, absolutely. And Kendall Milton, right, Buchanan grad, followed his career, 2 national championships. He could have opted out as well, get ready for the NFL. But he didn't. And there were a couple articles that I read that said, you know, once Kendall said, I'm playing in that game, sure enough, 2 guys said, I'm playing. 4 guys say, heck no, I'm not opting out. And what they do? He comes away with an MVP trophy. They win that game, right? And now look where Florida State is. Coincidence?
Yeah. Huh? It has been a trying year for Florida State, and maybe that's exactly kind of the mojo you don't want to have when you're a fan base like that. I just think, if they're going to complain that they didn't get in the playoff and just say, all right, forget it, we're not going to do it, at least Georgia's be like, hey, we thought we deserved to be in the playoff too, but let's go prove it out there. And so that should be a fun one. I think it starts an hour before the Fresno State game, so I'm going to be locked in on that one too.
All right,
so
lots of good stuff happening today. Phil, always great to talk to you. And, you know, we just hung out just, you know, 12 hours ago or so. So always fun chatting with you and being on the broadcast. Thanks for coming in. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, Paul.
All right. Coming up next, we got Shafter Generals head coach Gerald Perucci. They're now 4-0 after defeating Edison Fresno last night. Always love to catch up with Coach Perucci. That's coming up next on 1430 ESPN. All right, welcome back to Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports every Saturday, 10 to 12. We love talking with coaches and fellow guys in the media and breaking down all the great stuff that's happening up and down the central section in the communities that we love. We got Gerald Perucci, the head coach at Shafter, on the show right now. The Generals are 4-0 after defeating Edison Fresno 50-12 last night. Always love catching up with Coach Perucci. How you doing this morning, my friend?
I'm good. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing great. Love talking high school football, especially with guys like you. We got a lot in common. So I want to talk about your game last night. I mean, Edison Fresno is a storied program. They always have athletes, but you guys got a really good team there. Just kind of walk us through the game. What was working for you guys last night?
Well, I mean, we're still kind of finding ourselves a little bit just because of, you know, with when we lost Easy. Ezekiel, our quarterback, it's not that we had to change a lot of that we did, but the guy behind, you know, the center changed, and that does change things. So, you know, we're still kind of finding ourselves, but last night, you know, Edison's better than what I think people think about. It's just their schedule is a nightmare. I said this to somebody last night. Whoever made their schedule hates kids, because it's not fair to their program to be doing it in their current state. I think their coach is doing a really good job. He came in late. He's alumni. So I think he's trying to do some really good things. I think schematically and what they're trying to do are good. He's just, it's going to take time for it to happen. And plus, I think they had like a bunch of guys transfer out as well. So, you know, when you have that turmoil at the top, that leads to issues with people. And I think so they lost a lot of athletes. They're going to be fine down the road if they can stick with what they have. And coach gives it time, and they have a new AD too. So, so for us to play Edison last night the way we did, I was really happy with the guys because, we're still learning things. But ultimately, you know, when you put the ball in Marion Sloan's hand, who's one of the better athletes in the section, I think, it does give defenses fits in different ways. So defensively, we did a good job, too, shutting down their offense. You know, I had a sophomore quarterback come in and play some, and, you know, he threw a pick six to the other team. But on a whole, I thought it was a really good, really good night for us to get out and continue getting better at our new version of the Generals.
So what does the new version look like? Obviously, Ezekiel Osborne, he started as a freshman. He's a junior this year, if I'm not mistaken. But, what does the offense look like? Are you, you got a kid that can come in and not throw the deep ball, but pretty good at intermediate passes. What does that exactly look like?
Marion is the kid's an athlete. So, you know, my quarterback coach has been working with him. This week, you know, we played Dos Palos. He threw the ball twice. This week, I think he went 3 for 3 or 3 for 4, and threw a touchdown pass. Had an opportunity for a second one and just kind of short hopped it. He's getting better at the deep ball to be able to stress teams, and he's becoming more comfortable back there. But I mean, we run our zone read stuff, we run our power read stuff. Our run game did not change. It's just now you have not only our running backs who are pretty talented kids, but now you add another guy in there that if you don't defend him and a running back, he can take it to the house. So it's just a different dynamic where Easy was hey, I'm going to hurt you with my arms. My arm, Marion's more, I'll hurt you with his legs. So I don't think our offense has changed. It's just going to look different only because the methodology to getting athletes the ball has changed a little bit. So, yeah, that's about it, though.
Yeah, so he's obviously a dynamic player, and, you know, he's, you know, talk about Marion and what he can do on the football field just adds a different dynamic. That's a great way to look at it. So your wins this year are at Exeter 22-14. We're going to look back at that game. That's for a week one game. That was a really good win for you guys, a really good football game. Defeated Arvin 56-13. You mentioned that Dos Palos game 41-38. We're following that all in the broadcast last week. That's a great win for you guys. And then last night, the win against Edison. So you guys, you've already had your bye week, so you're going to be taking on St. Joseph next week on the road at Santa Maria. What do you know about those guys? How are you game planning against them?
Well, you know, I was just in my office sitting down, and I had their game film up watching them against them. I think they're a very talented team. You know, they're a Division One. I think they played in Division One playoffs last year. You know, they had some transfers, but they have a freshman quarterback in there now that is pretty dynamic, can throw the ball pretty well, but he's still a freshman. So they've had some really close losses to some really good football teams. So I think their record is not indicative of what they are, but they've also switched over. Last year they were a ground and pound, double tight, power eye type team, and this year they're spreading it out a little bit to help out their quarterback and then also give him some weapons on the edge defensively. You know, they're a pretty tough-nosed group on that side. I mean, I haven't had a chance to really break them down that much, but we're going to have our hands full. I kind of look at this this game as kind of our – the last two, this week and last and this coming week is our BHS, BCHS moment from last season. So, you play against some teams that play tough schedules and see really good teams. And that's the thing. I mean, Edison played, you know, they play, their schedule was brutal before us. So I had to tell my kids, I go, hey, listen, they've seen way better. So, you know, and then when you talk about St. Joseph's, it's the same thing. So it really comes down to who's going to execute better and then, you know, who's going to make the least amount of mistakes and ultimately take advantage of situations. And so St. Joseph's going to be a really good test for us and on the road. I mean, our road games this year, I think, are really preparing us for what we're going to probably see as we go through the playoffs. So, because Dos Palos was a playoff environment, it was a lot of fun. And I expect the same thing in St. Joseph's.
Talking with Shafter coach Gerald Perucci and looking at the base division. You guys are base D4, but you've played in base D5, but you played in base D4 or in the D4 playoffs, I should say. You know, the playoffs are certainly a gauntlet. What's your expectations for playoffs this year, and who do you think you might meet? I mean, it's going to be – you mentioned Exeter is probably going to be in there too, but, heck, even McLean might be there. I mean, it's Division Four. If you guys are moved up, I think it's going to be a great division of football.
Oh, yeah, I think Division Four is a fun league or a fun division. And what makes a lot of fun – I mean, you also have Corcoran is playing – I believe it's Corcoran – is playing really good football as well. You know, you just have – it's what I love about it is you have – they're smaller school. There are a lot of one-off schools in there, one city, one school town. So, you know, when they travel or they host, you know, the whole town is there. It's such a great environment. I think that's what – you know, for those of us that are getting a little longer in the tooth, you know, you kind of remember that as a kid. I know I did growing out here up here in Shafter, going to the smaller schools, and it's just a little bit more sense of pride when it comes to playoff time. And you know, you have little kids dressed in their jerseys and they're screaming and yelling like they're on the team. I mean, it's what high school football is about. And I think right now it's probably as far as different venues and different schools, you're going to, I think it's one of the better playoff
brackets to follow is the D4 side.
I absolutely agree. And you mentioned Corcoran. Kalinga's got a really good team. And
That's who I meant. Kalinga, actually.
Yeah.
Kalinga's got a really, really good team.
Speaking of playoffs, I want to go back to last year in the playoffs. And I spent a good amount of time on air expressing my opinion on what happened against Torres, a game where you guys lost on an illegal play in overtime. The center caught a two-point conversion. 10 months later, how are you able to frame that game? You know, you've had some time to talk to other people and, put that in the past. Or, how have you been able to frame that entire situation now?
Well, I think it was the way that I kind of talked about it afterwards. You hate to see your team lose like that. Because, most people, Gerald, you just can't. And I firmly believe we made enough mistakes in that game where we shouldn't have left it up to the last play. Ultimately, though, my kids did do what they were supposed to do. But at the same time, officials make mistakes and everything else. I think it's like that's what we've been talking about as a team this year. Learning how to finish teams not in the fourth quarter, but when you have opportunities in the third or even in the second to really put teams away. And we didn't do that against Torres that week. And Torres was a very talented team. I mean, they're a talented team. I thought, that was pretty much the Valley Championship for D4 was that semifinal game. But at the same time, there's things, you talk to your kids about, what it means to have character, what it means to step up and do the right thing, even though you know that you're going to take heat for it. Because there was a lot of moments there, I still say it. I don't think the kids failed the kids. I think adults failed the kids. And ultimately, the other side of it is, I think you also saw the fault in the way the CIF does playoffs officiating with mixed crews, going to seven-man crews, where you're putting these men in situations, men and women now, in situations that they're with people they don't know. They're in positions that they may not have done all season long. And then you're putting them in high-stress situations where, so much of officiating, just like a lot of other things, that's why they have crews. You learn different people. You have relationships with them. And then with relationships comes communication. So there was also a lapse of knowledge in the protocol, because it's funny. One of the referees that did the game did our freshman game last week. And so after the game, I'm walking out to my car, and I know the guy. He's a really good dude. And so during the game, we actually had something during, and it's a freshman football game, so all this stuff happens. Our quarterback threw it to the tackle. He was freaking out and threw it. Well, he caught it and ran for 15 yards. The other team declined the penalty, so it counted. So I walked over and I go, I guess that stuff is only legal in a freshman football game. And and I know he was good. So he started. I just started laughing. And then we sat and talked. And I haven't had a chance to talk. I've talked to them through emails or text messages, but I haven't had a chance to sit in front of them. And he just goes, Gerald, I stood right over there, and I go, we need to walk back out and throw this flag because this game shouldn't end this way. And there was a lack of, because the white hat thought it was a CIF's decision at this point, but in fact, the CIF said, no, it's a referee decision. I think you just have no one knew the right protocol in the moment. And that's probably the biggest thing that probably could have saved, or could have, the right thing should have happened. But ultimately, the referees, I've talked to all of them, and or the ones from Kern County, and they're all good people. So, they made a mistake, obviously a big one, but at the same time, I make mistakes. God knows how many times I've said the wrong thing to them, thinking that it's a rule and it's not a rule, and they have to put up with me. So, looking back, I wish it would have been fixed. But ultimately, you have to kind of move on. But I still believe adults failed adults, whether you're talking about the coaching staff for Torres or the CIF and the officials.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. Although, there's lots of lessons to be learned from that game. And, it was a really, really difficult situation to be in. But, You know, it's part of life, right? It's a life experience. It's something that you wish didn't happen, but happened. But it's about the response to it and how you guys come out of it and how you frame it later. You know, you've been in this game for a long time. I've been around for a while as well. And you know, the grand scheme of life and the grand everything that happens. On one hand, it happens for a reason, but it's about the responses and the changes that are made from it, right?
Yeah. Oh no, I can't. I've sent that play. I've sent to probably 8 or 9 officials associations around the country that reached out to me and said, "Hey, could we please get it?" And there's been multiple associations that play is now a standard teaching point for them, even though it's already a rule. I mean, I get asked before the game, what's the number of your snappers?
Yeah.
So they know. So at that game, I did give them the number of my snapper. I know they got the number for their snap at the same time. It's just in the moment. So, if anything, it's just like the thing with the state playoffs. You know, if it makes football better and takes away these type of moments later on, then I guess it's worth it in some way. It's just I'm really tired of being that guy right now, though. I'd rather just have a regular good fat old season. So.
And you guys are looking strong, Coach. I really appreciate it. I know that's not it's not easy to revisit. So from my end, I really appreciate you being able to answer that question.
Hey, no problem.
Yeah, and so you guys, I mentioned you got St. Joseph. We've got a couple minutes here. Taft, Delano, Kennedy, Chavez, and Wasco. You and I have talked about that Kennedy matchup and just what a great atmosphere. Looks like you guys have them at home this year on the 17th of October. Just kind of explain is it called Shafter Stadium? What is it even called, your football field there?
Yeah, it's Shafter Stadium. It's just Shafter Stadium. I'm trying to get it named to one of our athletic secretaries who just retired a few years ago. That was our athletic secretary for 20 years. I'm trying to get it named for her, but it's just Shafter Stadium.
So describe like what you think. Obviously, it's a few games ahead, but the atmosphere when you face Kennedy, what's that like?
Oh, it's a lot of fun. I think what we do kind of at Shafter, I know with the video board and the environment that we create there, I think is a lot of fun. In fact, Edison's coach, when he came in and he sees our production stuff that we do inside the stadium, inside our press box, and then the atmosphere that we create there, he's just like, the coach came down and goes, this is one of the funnest. And he goes, I played Division I schools all around Fresno. This is one of the most enjoyable, fun environments for a football game that he's been in. And he goes, and I've been coaching for a while. But then you add in the other elements, which is they bring their fans. And so it is such it's a great football it's a great football environment. You got two very rabid fan bases with Shafter and Kennedy's fans coming down from Delano, and they're starting to get their footing now. They're starting to get some athletes back from injury, and I expect Mario to have them running on all cylinders by the time they hit us in week 7 or week 8. And it's going to be like it normally is. It's probably going to be a 1 touchdown scored difference in the game, and whoever can touch the ball last. So. I always look forward to it. They do a good job coaching over there, and I think it's a good chess match for us coaches that really allow us to move into the playoffs, because they do really, really well. And so if you want to come and watch a good high school football game, that's a fun one to come and watch.
I would absolutely love to one of these days. All right, we only got about 30 seconds here, Coach, and you know I can't leave you without talking about a couple of our favorite things. We're kind of nerds at heart, right? We've said that publicly.
Yes, sir. Well.
You're a big Star Wars guy, and you're into gaming as well. So if you're stuck on a deserted island, can only access either Star Wars or Marvel movies, what's your choice?
So just movies.
Just movies, yeah. Just movies.
Just movies. I'm a Star Wars fan at heart, but if you're going to go movies, I have more content if I stick with Marvel. That's ultimately, because I can't count the last 3 Star Wars movies, maybe Episode 7, but I'd probably go Marvel movies because I have more to choose. Plus, one of my favorite characters is Iron Man. I love his story arc, so I can watch Iron Man movies all day long.
All right. Well, I am actually a little bit surprised. I would choose Star Wars, but maybe that's one of our
I love the Star Wars stuff that I can watch. But for example, I just finished my Darth Maul double bladed lightsaber. I finally got the second half of that one. So that one is on display in my. I don't have quite the sanctum that you have at home, but you know, for my little area, I do. That's one of my pride and joys in there now.
Yeah, I got some stuff. And if you had one of my coaches or coach on my show saying a Darth Maul double lightsaber on your bingo cards, go ahead and mark that as about a 1 in a million chance. But only Gerald Peruzzi can say that. So, Coach, I really appreciate you and thank you for coming on. Good luck.
No problem, Paul. Have a good day.
All right. Thanks to First String Sports, Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating, Jeremiah Cunningham for producing the show. Great job, my friend. Kyle Biggs, Andrew Pancotti, Phil Benatti, and Gerald Peruzzi for joining us today. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll talk to you again.